Welcome to the Jazz Notes Podcast. Ben Anderson, Chandler Holt from KSLSports.com, giving you a breakdown on the latest with the Utah Jazz and the NBA. We record this on Tuesdays. It is spooky season. It is Halloween. And finally, Chandler, we have four games under our belt. We can go back and look out for the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, for the first time since bringing the Jazz Notes Podcast back, we're going to have a week of games to talk about, which is exciting. Not so exciting. The Jazz are 1-3. They opened the season with a loss to the Kings at home, 130-114. They followed that with their first win of the season over the Clippers, 120-118. That was a great game. And then the first two road games of the season for the Jazz, they dropped to the Suns and dropped to the Nuggets.
Two pretty decent performances. I thought Monday's game against Denver, strangely, might have actually been their best performance. They won Friday, obviously. But I thought, considering the opponent, the road, what they'd been up against after playing so terribly against Phoenix and playing pretty poorly against Sacramento, I thought that bounce back was impressive of not having the crowd there. And the second half was really probably the best basketball they played. They won both the third and the fourth quarter against Denver. And I think you started to see for the first time the vision of what this team is going to be able to do. The front court of John Collins, Walker Kessler, and Larry Markkanen combined for 64 points and 36 rebounds or something, you know, like a dominant big man front court rotation that's going to suck up every rebound, is going to score a lot of points, and is going to do so pretty efficiently.
Yeah, and the Nuggets, I mean, they're 4-0. They're looking like the best team in the NBA right now, coming off of that NBA championship. And if you look at their other games, they beat the Lakers by 12. And then they beat the Thunder, who are expected to have a much better season than last year, by over 30 points. So only losing by 8 to the reigning champs is maybe a good sign.
Yeah, and you come home and you get a couple of easier games against Memphis and Orlando coming up. We will talk about that before the end of the show. But we wanted to look at, you know, instead of going game by game, we can try to talk about some pros and cons, some strengths, some weaknesses that we've seen so far through the first week for the Utah Jazz. Chandler, why don't you start with, do you want to do negatives first? Do you want to do positives first?
Let's get the negatives out of the way.
Okay, let's get the negatives out of the way.
My biggest red flag, if you want to call it that, for the Jazz for the first week of the season is just defense. Right now, they're dead last in the league in defensive rating. Now, you have to take this stat with a grain of salt because we're just 6 days into the NBA season. And right now, the Orlando Magic, funny enough, have the best defensive rating. Yeah. And even though they have good defenders like Jonathan Isaac, Wendell Carter, I don't expect that to stick. With that said, teams we expect to be bad defensively have already fallen to the bottom of the league, like Houston, San Antonio, and Washington. I don't expect Utah to be the worst defensive team in the league, but definitely a red flag, I'd say.
Yeah, and you know what? They could be conceivably the worst defensive team in the league. They don't have the personnel right now to be a great defensive team outside of Walker Kessler. And until last night's game, he just wasn't playing enough minutes to have a huge impact on the game. And even when he was out there, he wasn't blocking shots. He wasn't all that interactive. He wasn't all that, you know, he wasn't making a big, he wasn't factoring into the defense at all. So if he's not able to do that, the Jazz don't really have many great other defensive players. I mean, I think you like that Lowry's long and John Collins is long and ideally Talen Horton-Tucker is long, but there's not a guy out there who you're saying, like, every night I know what to expect and he's going to make life hard for the opposing team. It's not really what the Jazz do. It's not what they did last year, but when you have a monster at the rim the way Walker Kessler can be, that covers up a lot defensively, and he hadn't been it really until last night. And even then, last night, I don't think he was fabulous defensively. He was much better on the offensive side.
Yeah, definitely. And if you look at the games so far for the Jazz, they sort of have a mindset of, we're going to let your best player go off and allow everyone else on your team to beat us. When they won against the Clippers at the Delta Center, I believe Paul George and Kawhi combined for 61 points.
Yep.
And then you look at this game last night or night before against Denver, Jokic had 27, Gordon adds 21. So it's just the top of the top of each roster adding points when they go against the Jazz. And it worked against the Clippers, but it hasn't really worked out against some of the other teams.
Yeah, and you know, when you played a team in Phoenix that had a star at the top in Kevin Durant but didn't have Devin Booker or Bradley Beal, and then you let so many other guys like Grayson Allen and Eric Gordon go off, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, recipe for disaster for sure.
So the defense, I agree with you, a huge negative so far. Do you have another negative or just one?
I do have one more negative.
What's your other negative?
Is Utah fighting from behind. The Jazz are currently 1-3. In their only win so far against the Clippers this season, they led for the entirety of the first half. In all three losses, they trailed by double digits at some point in the first half. I think that Utah is a team that can compete as long as they stay within striking distance, but as soon as they're forced to come back from a deficit, that's where the losses will start rolling in.
Yeah, bad sign, and I'll just kind of jump in on that, is that you're falling behind because your starting lineup is playing so poorly. So the Jazz, I've got their advanced numbers pulled up right now, of groups that are actually getting significant minutes, the starting lineup, Jordan Clarkson, Larry Markkanen, John Collins, Talen Horton-Tucker, and Walker Kessler, They're averaging about 11 minutes a game together. They have a net rating of negative 4.5, which is second worst on the team behind another group that involved Kelly Olynyk, Jordan Clarkson, John Collins, Colin Sexton, and Keyonte George. Mm. So the starters, which are supposed to be your best lineup, is supposed to set you up early on to have some success, hand the game over to your bench, and then your bench can, you know, ideally your depth takes over. The Jazz just aren't doing it well. The starting lineup isn't good, and we will see if at some point Will Hardy tinkers with that. He's tinkered with basically everything else.
Yes.
He's really tried a lot of different things. He's thrown a lot out there, switched up his substitution patterns. Last night, he really let the starters in the third quarter go for a long time, and it was their best stretch. I won't be surprised now if maybe going forward he doesn't abandon that starting five, 4 minutes in like he had been, and just says, like, you know what, we've got to get Walker, Lowry, and John Collins on the floor together for an extended period of time, and then you need either Jordan Clarkson or Talen Horton-Tucker to play well. Last night, Talen played very well. Jordan played terribly. You have to have at least one of them. If they're both playing bad, you're going to be in trouble.
That's actually, I didn't have this down, but I would say that that has been a green flag, a good sign for the Jazz so far this year, is the fact that Will Hardy is playing with the lineup. Even if the starting lineup hasn't changed a lot, getting different rotations and different substitutions in will help. A good example of this is in the first game against the Kings, Will Hardy made about five or six one-man substitutions in the first quarter, and then in the win against the Clippers in game two, all he had was two group substitutions in the first quarter. So when you have a roster like the Jazz have, when you don't know who's going to be playing the most minutes in game 50, playing with the lineups is a good sign.
Yeah, and at some point, you know, Kelly Olynyk was coming in really early, and then it was, you know, Keyonte George was the first sub in, or Chris Dunn at one point was the first sub in. He really has tried to mix and match. He did the four-guard lineup, and for a while it was John Collins, and one time it was Walker, and he's like, well, let's try Lowry, actually. Like, he is really trying a lot. I know fans are always wanting you to tinker. Sometimes you end up with zero consistency, and that's a problem.
Yes.
But Will Hardy is doing a lot of work early on to try and figure out what is working and what is not working. And it goes back to the preseason of everyone wanting to see, like, Taylor Hendricks and Bryce Sensabaugh play, and I think that's totally understandable. But if they're not going to be in the opening night rotation, every minute they're on the floor, you're losing an opportunity to gain info about what the roster is actually going to look like to start the year, and then you're mad that the team doesn't play well, and it's like, well, if you wanted to play Taylor Hendricks in the preseason, he's not in the rotation.
Yes.
So which one is it? What do you want us to do? So I understand why that's got to be frustrating. All right, I'll go with my negative. I told you the starting lineup has been bad. And then truthfully, the guard play's just been bad.
Yes.
The Jazz guards have been bad, and we talked about the Hunger Games. And really, it wasn't the Hunger Games. It was you have five guys who aren't ready. It's not who's going to emerge as the best player. It's like, will anybody emerge? And that's the problem. Jordan Clarkson is the Jazz third-leading scorer, but he's averaging 12 points a game, which is way under what he did last year. He was at 20 points a game last season. You know, he's, what, 24-4 last year? Right now, he's at 12-5-3. He's shooting 29 or 35% from the floor and 29% from three. Like, that's bad.
Yes.
It's just really bad. He's a much better player than that. He's in a slump to start the year. He's got to come out of it.
Jordan Clarkson, THT, Keyonte George, and Chris Dunn are all shooting under 40% from the field right now. So I would definitely say it's fair to say that the guards have been sort of a negative so far this
season. Yeah, Colin Sexton averaging 12 points. He had his first kind of breakout game last night. Actually thought he played well. Hit a couple of threes finally. I don't think he'd had a hit a three yet going into last night's game. 41% from the floor, 22% from three. So you absolutely cannot trust him as a long-range threat.
Yeah.
And last year he was almost at 40%. He didn't take a lot, but he made them when he took them. And then his other numbers, 1.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists, like, just not good enough for a guy who's making $18 million a year. And I know he's only playing 20 minutes a game, but still, like, you're an initiator. You've got to play better than that. Talen Horton-Tucker, again, had his best game last night against Denver. Seemed like he figured it out a little bit. 9.5 points. 5.3 assists, which leads the team. That's a healthy number. You'll take that. 1.8 rebounds. But, yeah, just pretty terrible from the floor, 37%. He is shooting 40% from three. That's an improvement for him. If he can keep his number up there, I suspect the field goal percentage will climb. Keyonte George, 39% from the floor, 33% from three. I'm going to give him more of a pass just because he's a rookie and he's trying to figure it out. He's also getting a lot of late shot clock situations where he's dribbling and just like has to throw the ball. He did that several times against Denver. And I don't think that's on him. They're just kind of the way they would dump that on Jordan Clarkson. And he has had fewer of those this year than it seemed like he did last year. They're falling in Keyonte's hands. And some of that might be just, hey, you're not getting into the offense quick enough, but he's having to take some tough shots, and that's hurt his field goal percentage. And then Chris Dunn has been maybe the biggest disappointment on the team so far after such a good preseason, and I had preached that I thought he should be starting. 4 points, 2.3 assists, 1.5 rebounds, 31% from three, and 31% from the floor, and has yet to hit a three. It's like his thing during the preseason when he was super efficient. Yes. Like 85% from the floor and 66% from three, and no one expected him to keep that up. But I didn't expect him to drop to 31%. Like, he's missing his little floater. His layups aren't going in. He fouls within, like, 5 seconds every time he steps on the floor. So he's not been able to play a long time. His plus-minus has been fine, actually. The Jazz haven't been killed when he's on the floor. But it seems to me like he's already lost his spot in the rotation to Keontae George, who's now, I guess you'd call the third or the fourth guard. And Chris Dunn's a very clear fifth. Yes, and might be out of the rotation altogether in due time.
Yes, very true. I do think that Jazz fans can expect Jordan Clarkson and Chris Dunn to get those shooting percentages up, because we know what Jordan Clarkson can bring as a scorer, and Chris Dunn, the majority of his shots come from within 15 feet, so I think that both of them shooting around 30% is not something that's going to stay the same, but we can use this as a transition as one of my good signs for the Jazz so far is Keontae George. Keontae being a good sign is based more on the eye test. He's averaging 8-3-3 on the shooting splits that you mentioned. However, if you've been watching the games, you'll see him constantly being in the right spots. He looks confident both with the ball in his hands and as an off guard, which I think is big. And like I said, all of the other guards in rotation are shooting under 40%, and Keontae actually has the highest shooting percentage of all four of those guards. So
he would be very well served, and I could probably pull up his numbers here, but I'm not going to do it on the air. He would be well served by getting more catch and shoot opportunities, because mm-hmm. it seems like that is nails. Like,
yes.
He's having to shoot off the dribble quite a bit, and he's one of the only Jazz players who shoots off the dribble, and that's an important shot when you're coming off a screen or whatever it is. But when he gets these, you know, above the break catch and shoot threes, it looks nails every time, yes. and it goes in well. So I'm not worried about his shooting at all. I know he didn't shoot great at Baylor, but I think it will continue to come around, and his stroke is pretty pure. I believe that will be a part of his game. So, yeah, I'm watching everything else, and it's the playmaking, it's understanding how to get into the paint, where his shots are going to come from. He's not getting, like, nervous and just hoisting shots at all. We're not seeing that, which is something most young guards do. If he hasn't touched it in a while, the first thing he does is not shoot the ball. Like, some guys are like, oh, well, it's my turn to shoot. I haven't touched it in six possessions, and I'm a, you know, borderline lottery pick. He's like, no, he catches it, and the first thing he does is he passes it again. I'm like, oh, well, you're moving the ball because you recognize Lowry's better than you are. Walker is better than you are. John Collins is better than you are right now. And that's not always going to be the case. But right now, moving the ball is going to be your number one job. I think he has been the Jazz best, quote-unquote, point guard so far. His shooting percentages, if they were better, he'd be making a more serious threat to take over that starting job. But, yeah, you go one of six against Denver, and three of them are heaves. It's like, that's not really a bad shot from Keontae George, I don't think at all. And he'll continue to get more consistent and get in better shape, and that will make it, you know, his legs won't be so tired late in the game, and he's not taking heavy shots. So those things will help him. And then what I've been most impressed by is his defense. Like,
yes.
He was so good on Jamal Murray last night. Jamal Murray still had 14 assists, but shot below 50% from the floor, wasn't able to get off from three the way he did throughout the first three games of the season for Denver. He just puts his body into you. He puts his chest into you. He moves his feet, keeps his arms up. He doesn't play defense with his hands. Like, all the things you want to see a good defensive player do, he's already doing, and that was not his reputation. That's a really, really huge sign for him, because that's, you know, you can be an offensive dynamo, and if you're bad defensively, you cap yourself in the playoffs. So if he can keep up his defensive effort and then figure out how to become that offensive player that we saw him in summer league, we saw him do at times in the preseason, I think he's going to have a 20-point game coming up in the next couple of weeks. Like, it'll just accidentally fall into place, and he'll catch fire from three. He'll get to the free throw line, and he'll score 20. If he can do that and also play defense, his ceiling skyrockets.
Yes.
Because he can be a really high-level two-way guard, which is, you know, not something the Jazz have had in a long time. Mike Conley was great offensively, not really big enough, and kind of too old to be a good defender. Donovan Mitchell was never a good defender, even though he said, like, that was his reputation. We never saw it. Great offensive player, but couldn't defend. So if Keontae can do that, I think that's a huge plus.
Yeah, and I think that this is big for all defensive players, but specifically rookie guards who don't have tremendous defensive IQ. They aren't fully, like, studying NBA offenses every single day, yet they're still getting to that point. It comes down to effort, and Keontae has shown that effort in the first week, and I think that that's big, because one of the biggest questions for him was how can he perform on the defensive end.
Another positive for the Utah Jazz so far, they're top six in rebounding. As far as rebound percentage goes, they are grabbing 54% of the boards available, really good on the defensive side of the ball at 76%, very good on the offensive end at 35%. Where do they rank offensively? They're the number two overall offensive rating or offensive rebounding team in the league. They're number four defensively. So they're really good.
Yes.
They are a really good rebounding team. That's what you want from big athletic guys in the front court when you have Walker and you have John Collins and you have Lowry Markkanen. And I will say, John Collins has been very far from perfect. Don't get me wrong. You know, John Collins has not been a superstar yet, but he has 3 double-doubles in his first 4 games. He was 1 rebound away last night for having 4 double-doubles. I like the way he's playing. 13.5 points, 10.5 rebounds, and I know I'm stealing one of your positives here, but it falls in line with the rebounding. And after he shot the ball well last night, he's up to 47%. Three-point shot isn't connecting yet, still at 28%, which is very similar to what we saw last year at Atlanta, which was the big question mark, but I like that he's continuing to shoot them.
Yeah, you're very right. I think John Collins has been one of the best signs for the Jazz so far this year. I think that some fans maybe had too high of expectations or were just confused on what to expect from him. I know that he had a 21-10 season just 3 years ago, but that dropped to 17-7 and then 13-6.5 last year. He has been a force on the glass. He's created good looks in the offense, specifically in transition and on back cuts. And like you said, his efficiency is slightly down, but from the field and behind the arc. I think that's something you can sort of expect, though, when you're playing your first season with a new team. And also, he's averaging 4 offensive rebounds a game, which is the best on the Jazz and 5th best in the NBA.
Yeah, he misses some of his own shots and he gets his own offensive rebound, which is kind of a trick. But he's good at it. And I think actually the more he gets comfortable, the better he's going to be. And like the second quarter last night, he took over, which is something the Jazz weren't able to rely on very much from their forward, not named Lauri Markkanen, last year. So his ability in the second quarter, I think he had 9 points. It's just like, and he carried a big offensive load, and he hit a three, and he got to the free throw line, and he hit a mid-range shot, and he can obviously attack the rim, and he gets out in transition. Like, okay, you started to see it. And that's like going up against Aaron Gordon, who's a very good player. So
yes.
I thought that was promising if you're a Jazz fan. You liked what you saw from John Collins. And we should not overlook that Lauri Markkanen is playing out of his mind.
Yes, 25 a night.
Yeah, 25. 9.8 rebounds, 2.3 assists. He had 5 dimes last night. That's a huge number for him. He's shooting 93% from the three-point line. He's shooting 43% on 10 threes a game. Okay, you've got a perfect offensive player. Like, if he's going to do that, and he could stand to get to the free throw line a little bit more, just 3.5 a game, he's not getting a great whistle right now. But, yeah, you will take you'll take 25 and 10 and 43% from 3 on 10 attempts a game. He's at 9.8 threes. I just like that he's taking that many. I like that he's not afraid to jack up some shots. He was 5 of 13 last night. It's like, yeah, you just got to take 13 threes some games. When the Jazz are stagnant offensively and need you to bail out, you're 7-foot-tall and you're a sharpshooter.
Yes.
Like, you just got to take shots over Aaron Gordon. You just got to take shots over guys who are guarding you because you'll get it off. You're not going to get your shot blocked. You're not Jordan Poole getting blocked by Kristaps Porzingis. Like, just take the darn shot, and he did. So I like that from Lauri Markkanen. Guard's got to play better. Defense got to get better. But I think there's some signs of promise, and you've played well in 2 of your 4 outings. If you play as well as you did against Denver or Los Angeles, the Clippers, 75 times this year, you're going to be in the hunt for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
Even though you're 1-3. And we said at this time last week, you're probably going to be 1-3. 2-2, you'd be in really good shape. You won a game that you probably weren't expecting. And you certainly didn't want to go winless, because we would have been talking, we'd have been feeling real bad about this team for Jazz fans if they were 0-4 to start. Let's take a break. We'll look at the next week of games coming up. We'll look around the NBA a little bit and talk about a couple of things we learned about the Utah Jazz. Stick around. More Jazz Notes coming up next. Welcome back, Jazz Notes. Ben Anderson, Chandler Holt, KSLSports.com. Let's take a quick look at the Jazz schedule ahead, and we'll talk about some things happening with the Jazz. We can take a look around the NBA and see if there's any interesting trends starting out to begin the year. Tomorrow night, Wednesday, the Jazz are at home against the winless Memphis Grizzlies. Marcus Smart's playing really well. Jaren Jackson Jr. has been okay, but you lose 2 starters in Steven Adams and obviously Ja Morant for 25 games, and you're going to struggle, and they're going to be hungry. They're going to come into this Jazz game thinking, hey, this is our chance to win a game. They're going to look at that as when they've got circled to get off the schneid a little bit. But Jazz are also going to think, hey, that's a winnable game, so this should be a good battle. And then Thursday, second night of a back-to-back, both home games, you play the Orlando Magic, who are actually off to a pretty good start. Like you said, playing very good defensively.
Yes.
So good for them. You see Joe Ingles back in town. And then you start a long Midwestern road trip. You start in Minnesota on Saturday. Monday, you're at Chicago, and then we'll record again on Tuesday. So we'll just cut it off at those four. We said, 1-3 was pretty good for this week, even though 2 of the performances I thought were really underwhelming and ugly. What are you taking this week? What's a successful week this week for the Jazz?
I think 2 wins would be successful, but I can definitely see a world where they walk out with 3 or maybe even 4, because I'm looking at all these games, Grizzlies, Magic, Timberwolves, and Bulls. None of those teams are at the top. They haven't been playing their best basketball. I mean, Chicago, Zach LaVine dropped 50 points the other day, and they still lost.
They lost, yeah.
So I think that it is possible for Jazz to come out with their first winning week of the season. However, I think if you can at least take two of them, then you'll consider it a success.
I'm going to say 2-2 most likely, and I'm going to say 3-1 the second most likely, 1-3 being the third most likely, 0-4 fourth most likely, and then undefeated in this four-game stretch, the least likely of all the outcomes. But I could definitely see the Jazz going 2-2 or 3-1. 3-1, you'd feel really good about yourself,
yes,
because you've beaten a team on the road. You can't go 3-1 without beating a team on the road when two of them are away from home. And then it means you probably beat both Memphis and Orlando on back-to-back games, and you probably should. You probably should beat both of those teams if Memphis is playing that poorly. Orlando is still not quite there, not quite ready to be a good playoff team. And then you go on the road and play two teams that are, only playing so-so basketball early in the year at Minnesota and Chicago. I know I said I wasn't going to look past it, but it has to tie in with some news we saw from the Utah Jazz. At the end of that road trip, they'll play Indiana, and then they go back to Memphis on the road in what will be their first in-season tournament game.
Yes.
Jazz, I believe, will be debuting their mountain jerseys, their new city edition jerseys for that one. If not, they'll do it back at home coming up on Tuesday, November 14th, when they unveil the new court that we saw, along with 29 other teams' courts that are all color-themed based on what their jerseys were. What did you think of the purple court?
I was going to ask you the same thing. I think at first I was a little bit confused because it came out and I was like, oh, another court. I do think that the 50th anniversary court is better, but I like it. I like the all-purple court. It's definitely a change of pace, and I'm excited to see, especially if the Jazz do wear their city jerseys, because I saw some people were not a fan of the city jerseys, but I think that the Jazz have one of the best ones in the league there.
That's what's funny. So last year when all the Jazz, rebranding came out, I ranked all the jerseys they wore last year, including the Purple Mountain jersey, the black jersey, the yellow jersey, the white jersey. And then they had teased that they're going to have this year's Jazz Note jersey, which is the original year one Pistol Pete Maravich jersey. And then they had this mountain redesign, the city jersey, and they even teased it last year, like coming next season. And I ranked that one as the worst jersey, the new city jersey this year, the redesigned mountain jersey. And I think it's either that one or the white one for me, or my least favorite. And they're both fine.
Yeah.
But then I saw the rest of the NBA city jerseys, and legitimately the Jazz might have the second best city jersey.
Yes.
And it's the worst of their five rotation for me. The league and Nike did a terrible job at these city rebrands.
So bad. There are some of them that I don't even understand how they got through.
How they got a thumbs up?
Yeah. Exactly. Like the Heat culture one, terrible.
Really bad. Chicago has a terrible one. Go back. Go look at them. They're awful. The Jazz really had a much better city jersey than I had thought. So I owe them some credit. And I've told you I'm a fan of the black jersey. I'm a fan of the yellow jersey. Those are my two favorite they wear right now. And then I love we saw it against the Sacramento Kings on opening night. I think the Mardi Gras throwback looks great.
Yes,
definitely. The purple jersey looks absolutely fabulous. I like the trim on it. They did a nice job with that. So overall, I think the Jazz jerseys are pretty good. And we will get to see that in the court debut. One of the things I always make sure I give myself leeway is I need to see it in person first. Like, seeing a mock-up does not have the same impact of seeing it in person. And maybe it's worse in person. But I'm not going to make a definitive statement that, like, oh, the purple court's terrible until I see it with NBA players on it in these special jerseys. It is supposed to be a full experience, and including whatever shirt or whatever they're giving away to fans in the audience. Like, it's supposed to be all together. Pulling out one element and looking at it by itself is a stupid way to do it. So I'm not going to judge it yet.
Yes, the Jazz made their season debut against the Kings on Wednesday with the new 50th anniversary court and the jerseys. And on Thursday morning, I ordered the jersey.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, they're good looking. It's a very classic looking NBA jersey. I know why fans want to go back to purple and want that to be a kind of their staple. And I think that's totally fine. No, they look good. It's a very good jersey. Did you go custom or did you get a player?
I got the celebrating with the 50 on the middle.
Oh, that's fun.
Yes.
That's nice. Yeah, not bad at all.
Let's go back to the next week games really quick. Something I want to say. They host the Magic on Thursday. And that made, to some people, that was like, okay, two teams that are not expected to do a whole lot this year, like maybe not that exciting. But I think it's a great matchup for a few reasons. One, both teams are younger teams, right? So I think whenever you have two young teams going at it, it's going to be probably a lot of highlights, maybe not a lot of philosophical basketball.
Sure.
And then also, I think that there's a lot of similarities between the lineups. The front court for the Magic is Franz Wagner, 6'10", yep. Paolo Banchero just under 7 foot, and then Wendell Carter, same thing, around 7 foot. And I think that matches up pretty well with the big front court that the Utah Jazz have.
Yeah. No, that's a fun one. I mean, I've told you, I like Jonathan Isaac coming off the bench. Like, he's a really good player, and Joe Ingles coming off the bench. And my favorite thing about the NBA is rookies, because the draft is my favorite thing. And, like, Anthony Black isn't playing. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, as much as you can complain about some of these players, maybe that should be our segue here into player stats, is that, like, this rookie class has been underwhelming so far. And I don't think it's just the Jazz. I think it's just league-wide. And we had wondered this a little bit, which is, hey, is this draft really good, or is Victor Wembanyama really good?
Yes.
And then we think Scoot is pretty good. And by the way, Scoot didn't even end up being the number two overall pick. Like, mm-hmm. Brandon Miller did, and I was a little hard on them for that. And by the way, it's looked like the right pick early on.
Yes.
But Brandon Miller's been really good. And guess what? He's coming off the bench.
Yeah.
Like, Gordon Hayward is starting in front of him, because Gordon Hayward's better than Brandon Miller still. Maybe. Maybe. Brandon Miller's pretty good. Yeah, right. Like, it's just not been this crazy class of players stepping up. But it's like, oh, well, I know what the future of the NBA looks like. Here, we'll pull it up, because we were talking about looking around the rest of the league. I think this is a good opportunity to do it. Let me pull up the rookies right now at NBA.com. See if it actually runs. All right, right now, your leading scorer among rookies in three games is Brandon Miller, and he's shooting the heck out of the ball. 17.3 points per game. He's going to be in the starting lineup like next week. He has to.
Yes.
47% from the floor, 43% from three, 6 rebounds, 2 assists. Awesome. Victor Wembanyama, 15.7 points per game. Very good. 44% from the floor. He's 7'5". I would like him to shoot better than 44%. 23% from three, which was always the question about him. And I know he came out and hit threes early in his first game. He didn't shoot well last year in Europe. And that was going to be a question of how quickly that was going to come along. He's down to 1.7 blocks per game, which, again, I know we're going to be like, he blocks 6 a game. It's like, he's had 5 so far this year in 3 outings. But 7.3 rebounds. Like, he's going to be very good. But he is not quite ready to take over the NBA, even though you'll see highlights that suggest he is. Chet Holmgren, the second-year rookie, averaging 15 points a game, shooting extraordinarily well. 60% from the floor, 62% from three on 4 attempts. Like, that's pretty legitimate. Also giving you 6.3 rebounds and 2.8 assists. Chet is playing very well. Sasha Vezinikov, who we saw with Sacramento. Big guy, shoots the three, but more of a veteran, not like the super youngest guy coming into play. Derek Lively has played very well in Dallas. People thought that would be a good pickup. He was a lottery pick because he just has to catch lobs from Luka and Kyrie, and I think that's a pretty good job for him.
Definitely.
He's averaging 9 points and 6 rebounds, but like Asar Thompson, 32% from the floor, 14% from three. Cason Wallace played well, but got hurt already. He's played in 4 games, but he's shooting 85% from the floor and 83% from three. I bet those numbers drop. I bet he doesn't shoot 85 and 85 throughout the whole season. Scoot, 10.5 points a game, shooting 33% from the floor, 5% from three.
Yes, 1 for 18.
5% from three, and that was his knock. He can't shoot, and that was kind of the expectation, was he wasn't going to be able to shoot. Like, truthfully, even though he's averaging a half point less than Scoot Henderson, Keontae George has been better than this year. Keontae George is at 7.8 points, but is shooting basically 40%, 39% from the floor, 33% from three, so I trust his shot a lot more. He's averaging an assist less per game. He's also playing 10 minutes fewer a night. Like, if you handed the ball over to Keontae, he would have gotten a lot more. His numbers would be a lot higher.
Definitely.
He would just get into the flow of game a little bit more. And then, sorry, I won't kill you with this. I know this is a little boring. Amen Thompson, the number 4 overall pick.
Yep.
Amen has shooting. He's averaging 7 points a game. He's actually shooting 42% from the floor, which is not bad, but only 20% from three, 3.3 rebounds. Like, these guys that were all that everyone wanted the Jazz to tank for, and it's like, oh, how did you get Taylor Hendricks when if you would have lost 3 more games, you would have moved up? It's like, I haven't mentioned Anthony Black yet, because Anthony Black is literally not in the rotation. Like, Jairus Walker, is not playing. He's on Indiana, who's young and could use him. He's literally not playing in these games. So when you're seeing this rookie class, or you're not seeing Taylor Hendricks or Bryce Sensabaugh, like, I don't need to hold water for the Utah Jazz. That's not what I'm trying to do. But, like, you are not seeing a lot of these young guys get on the floor and produce at all. Kobe Bufkin hasn't done anything at all. Bilal Coulibaly had a really great start, had a first couple of games. He's down to 29% from the floor and 25% from three at 4 points a game in 21 minutes. Like, he's really getting a lot of opportunities, and he's not producing at all. So you just don't need to panic.
Yes.
You don't need to panic right now. I thought Taylor Hendricks showed enough in the last couple of games of preseason. You started to realize, like, okay, I get what he's going to do. Let him play 30 games, 25 games with the Stars. They started training camp this week. He's going to be featured. It's what that whole season is about. So is Bryce Sensabaugh. And they'll make their mistakes, and they'll grow a lot. And then maybe by midseason, if you feel like, you know, Simone Fontecchio or Lucas Chaminade shouldn't be on the team every night, and you want to make sure that Taylor Hendricks is active on the off chance that you can get 8 minutes, you put him out there.
And not only don't panic, I think that that may even be a cause for celebration for Jazz fans, because you have Keyonte George, who's looking like one of the best rookies, even if it is only 8 points on 40% from the field. And then instead of letting Taylor Hendricks and Bryce Sensabaugh go out there and fight for their breath in the water, they put them down in the G League and let them work themselves up to be NBA ready. I think that the Jazz are going the right way about this.
Yeah, if you want to be mad that you didn't end up with Brandon Miller or Victor Wembanyama, I think that's fair. If you wanted the Jazz to tank, lose a bunch of games last season, even though you see how little appetite Jazz fans actually have for losing when they start out 1-3, that's fine. And if you that's going to be your argument, I think that's totally fair. But outside of that, the draft picks from this year, Chet Holmgren was number two overall last year. I would take Keyonte George at this time as a coin toss with basically anybody else and just say, like, there's a realistic chance he's going to be just as good as any of these other guys.
Yes.
And you got him at 16. And that's not to mention your number nine overall pick, who you haven't seen yet. And we'll see if Bryce Sensabaugh can do anything. All right, you want to look around the league real quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's take a quick gander at some NBA standings. Who's playing well? Who is playing poorly? Celtics have looked every bit the part so far. They're deep. Kristaps Porzingis is playing well. He had the big game against New York, but he had 30 in his debut or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you want. Yep. He's got to stay healthy. Talking to some NBA people who are way smarter than I am, I asked, you know, Kristaps, is that going to work? Like, that's such a different culture than what they were trying to present. They're like, he's 7'4" and he shoots threes. Like, yeah, it'll work. It's like, oh, sorry. Sometimes I'm like, I want to see how the watch is made. And they're like, just tell the time.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the watch's job is. And he's huge and he hits threes and he makes life easier for everybody. Like, he's better than Al Horford at this point. Okay. That was an upgrade. And then you add Drew Holiday, and he's looking like the best piece in that what ended up being basically a huge trade with Damian Lillard and DeAndre Ayton, who's been awful. DeAndre Ayton's been so bad in Portland right now. He's at like 8 points a game, which is fine. He's just not getting many shots. He's averaging 15 rebounds randomly. His rebounding is way up. But yeah, Celtics have looked really, very good. Bucks are 2-1. Haven't looked good yet.
Mm-mm. The first game looked good, but then
they beat Philly.
Yes.
But Philly is a wreck right now and just traded James Harden last night for a sack of potatoes, essentially. Like, I didn't love the return Philly got for him. I also don't love it for the Clippers, if I'm being honest with you. But, the Bucks just have not... It's not quite clicked. Dame's really shooting poorly. He will figure that out. I don't think Dame's going to struggle his whole life, but I think he's trying to figure out how to play off the ball a little bit more. Pacers started 2-1, but I think they'd beat, like, the Trail Blazers and some other... The Wizards or something, some terrible teams. Magic are 2-1. 76ers are 2-1. No winless teams in the East, though.
Yes.
So that's good for the Eastern Conference. In the West, two teams undefeated so far, the Nuggets and the Mavericks. We'll see if that Mavericks stuff is for real.
Yes.
I liked what they did in the offseason. Like, I like Grant Williams that they went and added. They held on to Kyrie. I don't know if Kyrie had any other options. But so far, so good for a team that was worried that maybe you were going to have to put Luka on the trade block midway through the season if he asked out. Warriors have been good. Thunder are 3-1, but they did get trounced in their first real test against the Denver Nuggets. Suns are 2-1, but they've been hurt. Lakers at 2-2, a little underwhelming. Timberwolves at 1-2 is underwhelming for me. Mm-hmm. And they have not played well. I mean, they just got crushed by Atlanta. So I haven't seen much there. And then the Rockets and Grizzlies are both winless so far in the season.
Yes, I think that a lot of fans could have predicted that Celtics and Nuggets could open the season at least through the first week and be undefeated. But I think it is definitely surprising that the Mavericks are there as well. I think that they had a center hole, right there before Derek Lively came in. It was, okay, maybe Dwight Powell, who else is going to take that spot? And then... honestly, I think Derek Lively has shown that he could be the perfect rolling center next to Kyrie and Luka. He can give that hustle. And in their first game, I think this sort of went under the radar. He had an offensive rebound with 30 seconds left off of a Kyrie Irving miss, gets it back out to Luka. Luka hits a shot. That's a game-winning rebound.
Right.
So I think that that's big for them. But something. I do want to go back to the Clippers really quick because even though they're only 2-1, they looked really good through the first three games. They had their offense was moving tremendously. Russell Westbrook was swinging the ball around the arc and it was getting to everybody's hands.
Not taking a lot of shots, yes, which is the key for Russ.
Exactly. And now they add an ISO-heavy ball-in-my-hand player in James Harden after it came out a week ago that they were sort of dropping those conversations. So that was confusing to me.
Yeah, I don't think James Harden makes them better.
No.
Now, I don't know if, you know, having Robert Covington and Marcus Morris and the few weird people, Nicholas Batum, who I like, I'm not sure they were going to put them closer to a title, in all honesty, either. I get what they're doing. They're kind of cash-strapped, and they said, well, we're going to err on the side of high-level talent over depth. I think you just have to have both.
Yes.
And they kind of were picking between their poisons. And same with the 76ers, right? Like, they now have a little bit more depth in Robert Covington and in Nicholas Batum and these guys who conceptually provide some depth if Tyrese Maxey is ready to take that huge all-star step forward and play alongside Joel Embiid. Like, I get it in concept, but you don't go out and make all the moves they did to get James Harden and put so much pressure on that being the move that was going to finally push you over the top and win you a title and then end up with the key piece being Nicholas Batum.
Yes.
You know, like, ugh. It's just bad. It's bad for both teams. I don't like it.
It was a really confusing trade because, especially come playoff time, I know that anyone and everyone can get on the floor in the regular season, but who in that trade package is going to play for Philly, assuming they make the playoffs? Maybe Robert Covington gets 8 to 12 minutes a night.
Yeah, Batum might be able to play a little bit.
Yeah, but it's overall, like, not a good return for James Harden. I know he didn't want to be there, but
yeah,
it's and a rough spot.
Maybe P.J. Tucker can play in with the Clippers and give them some toughness. Again, if you have a healthy Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, you're good. And then you add, you know, James Harden into that. I get it in concept. You've never had a healthy Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, and then you're asking a lot of James Harden, and that's not going to work either. So,
yes.
A lose-lose trade, a rare lose-lose right off the bat. We'll see. Maybe the Jazz will be happy in the long run that they ended up facing the Clippers before they got James Harden, if they can turn into a regular season juggernaut.
Yep.
Otherwise, we can catch up more on the NBA coming up next week. Do we get any questions in the mailbag?
Let me check. Yes, we got one from Glenn Anderson. Do you think that Will Hardy is being asked to play certain players so they can be highlighted for a consolidation trade in the future? Is it the 10-man lineup what's best for team's morale?
I don't think the 10-man lineup is what's best, but I don't think it's, hey, you're showcasing somebody right now. Like, look, if Talen Horton-Tucker came out and played unbelievably well and did what he did last night, every night, was 13-7 and shot, you know, 50 to 60% from the floor just because he makes smart attacks to the basket. He doesn't always do that, but he did it last night. And then hit threes at like a 35% rate, you would just say, oh, we'll just keep him. Yeah. Like, he's 22 years old. He's clearly improving a little bit. If he did that every night, you would like it. He doesn't do it every night. But the problem is, like, the guys around him, again, as we said, have just been terrible. Like, Colin Sexton has not been good until last night and is equally as unreliable.
Yes.
And Jordan Clarkson, who should be the most reliable player, has maybe been the worst of them as far as his highs and lows. So that's a problem. And then you're just waiting for Keontae George to, like, fully become the guy.
Yes.
And he just isn't there yet.
Yes.
And Chris Dunn's been terrible.
I think that that is much more likely than maybe highlighting players for a trade, is the fact that you need to get these players in front of Keontae until he's ready to take their spot, right? And I think that depending on who you put in front of him, maybe he can learn different things from that. If you put Colin Sexton in front of him, maybe he's like, okay, I need to be more aggressive and be more of a dog on defense. And then if you have THT, to be honest, I don't really know what he can learn from THT. Hopefully not a lot, because there's a lot of things that THT does that maybe isn't the best for the Jazz offense. But I don't think that that is what's going on in Utah.
No, I don't think so either. I think they're just trying to find the right guys, and at some point this will drop from a 10-man rotation to a 9-man rotation with four guards instead of five, but you haven't had four very clearly separate themselves out yet.
Yes.
And I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't bail on Chris Dunn yet. I would still give him a chance. And again, maybe if the starting lineup's terrible and Jordan just needs more touches and Talen's taking away too many touches because he likes to shoot the ball, maybe you still try Chris Dunn there for a couple of games and say, well, the defense is the worst in the NBA. Can you improve that with Chris Dunn playing alongside Walker Kessler? And then you get more shots for the other guys in the starting lineup, including John Collins and Jordan, then all of a sudden maybe you feel a little bit better about that. So I wouldn't pull him out of the rotation yet. I think that's a little too hasty, but I bet you it's coming. I bet you that will be down to a 4-man guard rotation before too long. And the thing is, you know, both Colin Sexton and Jordan Clarkson are going to be in it because they combined to make $43 million this year.
Yes.
So they're going to play.
Thank you guys for tuning into the Jazz Notes podcast. We will be back next Tuesday after a stretch of very winnable games for the Jazz.
Follow me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. Follow Chandler at Chandler Holt KSL. Download the podcast. Subscribe at KSLSports.com or anywhere you get your podcast. We'll be back to you next week.